You're listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
The ancient Greeks thought that everything was made out of four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. And in recent times, some have thought that these elements can be compared to different layers of the human being: the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual. The fire, then, can represent the spirit. And just as fire is the same all over the world, there is some universal animating force which is available to all of us.
This water that's been mixed together, coming from so many sources, there are many lessons in this water. It's not the internet, it's not even a book, but there are lessons that we can draw from it. Now, this water, we haven't asked people to specify where it's come from, but there could be water from the snow from Tibet. There could be water from a creek in Peru. There could be water from some special river. We all have our own backgrounds and our own stories, but at the end of the day, our humanity is one. We're all in this together on this blue boat called Earth. And more than that, we all come to this place as Unitarians with our own background, our own religious heritage, our own philosophies, our own belief system. But here they coexist in harmony, just as the water can be mixed and it's still water. And more than that, we know that water is essential to life, and it's in all of us. It's a symbol itself for the fact that we are all one. This planet, our beings, all humanity, we are all one. And so blessings upon this water, blessings upon the water that we need to survive, and blessings upon each other as we care for each other, which becomes the natural thing to do if we can just remember that we are all one. So with these blessings, I now invite the children to take the water out to the garden. So children, it is time to go out and enjoy your time with David and each other. And now I would ask Lorraine to come up and give a short reading today. Thank you.
The reading this morning is from the New Testament, John chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water that I will give will never be thirsty. The water that I will give will become a spring of water within, welling up to eternal life.
One of the talents of the spiritual person is to see not just the water, but the shimmering and reflections on the water. So here are some reflections on the water. Because water is so fundamental to life on Earth, on this blue boat, humans have always been drawn to it, been fascinated by it, and mythologized about it. But first, some science to keep the materialists happy. The Earth's surface is made up of over 70% water. As the author Arthur C. Clarke said, "How inappropriate to call this planet Earth when it is quite clearly ocean." Our brains are made up of over 70% water. Even our bones are over 30% water. Perhaps we need to rewrite Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. Instead of "you are dust and to dust you shall return," it should probably be "you are water and to water you shall return." Water is the sine qua non of life, meaning without it, we're stuffed. We all appreciate the sound of waves lapping on the shore or waters babbling in a creek. Although not proven, it is easy to believe that we are genetically wired to be attracted to sources of water, since they indisputably sustain life. The big Ghana campsites are always around water. For example, around the Torrens, Karawirapari, and Waraparinga, down near Marion. Water meant not only a drinking source, but also a source of food, because of course it attracted the kangaroo, the emu, and a range of smaller edible creatures. Unsurprisingly, water features in the Jewish account of creation. It is fascinating that the universe, according to this account, starts off as all water. Genesis chapter 1, verses 6 to 8. "Let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. God called the vault sky." So the heavens, according to this account, are created by lifting the primeval Venetian blinds of water to create a space in between. And then later comes the earth, the animals, and then humans, and that's when the trouble really begins. Slightly closer to the theory of evolutionary biology is the Hindu account of creation, according to which all beings emerged from the primordial sea. The Greek philosophers thought a lot about water. Thales thought that it was the primal element from which everything else was established. Possibly carbon would have been a better guess, but he didn't know about carbon. Other Greek philosophers, including Empedocles, Plato, and Aristotle, expanded on that notion to state that everything was based on four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. And these elements became foundational to Western esoteric thinking, including the philosophy of the alchemists, the theosophists, and various 20th century esoteric groups. Water's not just for drinking. We use it to clean ourselves. If I could find the time, I would take a long hot bath every day. One of the most powerful and enduring metaphors in human history has been the parallel between physical cleansing on the one hand and cleansing of spiritual impurities on the other hand. We can go back to pre-Christian Jewish times and their ritual bathing. The book of Leviticus sets out numerous rules relating to being clean and unclean in the taboo sense. Both men and women were required to bathe after certain bodily emissions. Not the same emissions, but I'm not going to go into details. Bathing meant full immersion, even so that the hair was beneath the surface of the water. The mikvah, this I could say ritual bath, was usually built with steps going down to a level deep enough for the person to stand in it. The ritual bathing would also be undertaken prior to special occasions, such as marriage or ceremonies of religious significance. And for some modern Jews, it has been expanded to include other celebrations, for example, after getting a new job or getting divorced. Those of Christian heritage learn of a variation to the Jewish ritual bathing in the stories of John the Baptist, Yochanan ben Zachariah, immersing disciples in the Jordan River. The sensations of being immersed in warm water, womb-like water, and being summoned out of the water was a metaphor for being reborn, reborn as a spiritual person, leaving behind the errors and injuries of the past. An indispensable aspect of this purification ritual was the wholehearted commitment to maintaining freedom from error into the future. For Christians, the story then focuses on one of those who accepted John's baptism, Yeshua, who went on to preach the metaphor of the kingdom of God and to face crucifixion. For others, the focus remained with John. After the Roman army purges of the Jews in the 70s and the 130s, the followers of John moved further east and established a large community in what is now southwestern Iran. The Mandaeans, also called Sabians, continue to this day. Due to their persecution in Iran, many have emigrated, and as the photograph shows, there is now a small but thriving community in Sydney. And to this day, much of their religious observance is based around rituals of water, water which cleanses and purifies both physically and spiritually. Thank you, that was beautiful. Water, we may recall, featured in many stories associated with Yeshua. He turned water into wine. He walked on water. In a more readily comprehensible story, he met a woman at a well where he taught that his spiritual message was as invigorating and essential to life as the water which could be drawn from the well. As I said earlier, water became a feature of the system of alchemy which developed in medieval Europe. Water was an essential component in the journey of transmuting lead into gold. No doubt for many, this was a materialistic quest. On the other hand, for centuries, the aim of turning lead into gold has been imagined as a quest of spiritual development, as we transform our materialism and our selfish desire into wisdom and love for others. Water played a role in this process as a solvent. The alchemical books refer to strong water, which probably referred to the actual use of sulfuric or hydrochloric acid. This was used to dissolve impurities in order to refine the metal, which was the subject of their laboratory experiments. Metaphorically, we have once again the notion of water purifying ourselves, washing away petty materialism and aggrandizement of the ego in order to become more advanced as a human being. In the theosophical system, water came to represent the emotional aspect. Although there are watery metaphors for feelings as far back as Chaucer, I can't see consistent use of water as a symbol of the emotions until the literature of the theosophists, esoteric societies of the late 19th century. Taking on the old Egyptian idea that we are composed of many layers, including physical, emotional, material, and spiritual, the theosophist seeks initiation, in other words, learning the lessons of life, in respect of each of these aspects of our human existence. Mastery of the emotional level, symbolized by water, means gaining ever-present serenity instead of the turbulent, reactive emotions experienced by most people as they knock about through life. The idea varies now from water as a purifier to us rather purifying our own waters. For Carl Jung, water was a symbol for the unconscious. When it appeared in dreams, it was often a point of connection to the unconscious, allowing analysis to bring specific unconscious impulses into conscious experience for resolution. On a more general level, water can represent the spirit of life as it touches humanity throughout the course of history. I was talking to a gentleman in a mosque recently, and I was quite startled when he stated that he saw the essence of the world's great religions as a watercourse running underneath the surface of the earth, bursting forth into fountains at various places as the divine essence came into the consciousness of the human beings of a particular time and place. This was startling to me, as I had a similar vision many years ago. My vision went one step further because it elaborated this stream of spiritual consciousness in this respect. When it bubbles up above the surface, people initially rejoice at the inspiration it provides. Then the forces of the world, even though they may be clothed in religion, build a tap on top of the gushing springs and start measuring out doses of water for the community on condition that they subscribe to a particular identity, and even making the thirsty people pay up in gold as well. The Irish poet W.B. Yeats touched on the universality of our human experience of water in his poem, The Lake Isle of Innisfree. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway or on the pavements grey, I hear it in the deep heart's core. Water connects us all. We are water. We are one humanity. I'd like to finish with a visualization and a prayer, a brief exercise in the imagination for those of you who wish to take part. I invite you to close your eyes, check that you have good posture, to start breathing deeply. Relax. If you will, imagine yourself on a warm day, unencumbered by heavy clothes, entering into a warm, clean pool of water, walking down stone steps until you stand on the solid floor of the pool. with warm water over your shoulders. Take a deep breath. Immerse your head for a second in the water, even so your hair is under the water, and bring it back out of the water. Breathe again as you wipe the water from your eyes and smooth your hair back. Feel the warmth of the water all around your body. It is refreshing. It is soothing. And now I say a prayer. May we be inspired by the Spirit, by the teachings of wisdom, and by the kindness of others, to dissolve our selfishness, anger, and frustration. Our past mistakes, all the times we have loved less than we could have, are washed away in this moment. And in this moment, we commit ourselves to becoming ever more pure in our intentions, growing in wisdom and love, acting kindly and graciously with all whom we encounter. May it be so. May it be so. May it be so. We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitarianSA.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitarianSA.org.au.